Okay, thank you for everyone indulging me in with the physical activity break. Don't you feel better?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so I have a short introduction here. It's my great honor to introduce Dr. Ben Dyson, our Catherine Ennis SIG Scholar Lecturer for 2023. Dr. Dyson is a professor in the Department of Kinesiology in the School of Health and Human Services at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. Dr. Dyson has worked in our field in three different countries, including the University of Auckland, Aotearoa, New Zealand, the University of Memphis, the University of New Hampshire, and McGill University in Montreal, Canada. Dr. Dyson is recognized internationally as a leading researcher in, whoops, sorry. We do want to acknowledge Lisa, but not yet. As a leading researcher in three closely related areas, research on innovative curriculum and pedagogy in health and physical education, cooperative learning as a pedagogical practice, and scholarship in social and emotional learning. His textbooks are perhaps the most widely used resources on the use of cooperative learning in physical education. Moreover, his research on social and emotional learning is widely used across the fields of physical education and education. Dr. Dyson's scholarship involves school-based research that has greatly contributed to the evidence base on effective pedagogy for children's health and well-being. He also bridges the theory to practice gap and translates what we are doing into practitioner terms that are usable for teachers. Dr. Dyson has published more than 68 peer-reviewed journal articles, 3 textbooks, and 18 book chapters. He's also given 105 peer-reviewed conference presentations, plus how many this week? At least a few more. Additionally, Dr. Dyson has given invited keynote presentations around the world, including the US, Spain, Israel, Korea, Japan, Hong Kong, Australia, China, Indonesia, and Germany. He serves as an honorary associate professor of education at the University of Hong Kong. Dr. Dyson served as the editor of the Journal of Teaching and Physical Education from 2012 to 2016. In this leadership role, he took the initiative to change the structure of the JTPE review board and introduced associate editors. During his tenure at JTPE, the submissions increased from just over 100 to over 300 per year. Currently, he reviews for several peer-reviewed journals and he serves on the editorial board for JTPE. In 2017, Dr. Dyson was the chair of the SIG Research on Learning and Instruction in Physical Education. He also served as the program chair for SIG 93, working with Professor Kathy Ennis in 1999 and 2000. Further, Dr. Dyson served on the ISET board for 2 terms from 2014 to 2022. On the ISET board, he initiated an effort to recruit emerging scholars from developing countries and fund scholarships to the annual conference while facilitating connections between them and established scholars. Since the 2019 ISEP conference at Adelphi University, he has raised enough money to fund registrations and ISEP memberships for 13 scholars from 6 different developing countries, including Indonesia, East Timor, South Africa, Turkey, Pakistan, and Brazil. Bless you. Further, Dr. Dyson is also a research fellow in SHAPE America. Please join me in thanking Dr. Dyson for all that he does for our field and for children and youth around the world, and get hooked on the feeling of welcoming him as our 2023 Special Interest Group on Research and Learning and Physical Education, Catherine Ennis SIG Scholar. I give you Dr. Ben Dyson.
Are you ready? So, ooga chaka chaka chaka, ooga chaka chaka chaka. I can't stop this feeling. There's a video out, I think, on that.
It was from the bar the other night. So, kia ora, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. That is a Māori greeting. It comes from my homeland, where we're greeting those here present, absent friends and colleagues, our family and relatives, and also ancestors. In addition to that, though, and I haven't heard this much this week, but Indigenous First Nations acknowledgement. So we are located on the traditional unceded homeland of the Council of the Three Fires, the Ojibwe, the Odawa, and the Potawatomi. I might have that incorrectly. Yeah. Say that again, Tom. Potawatomi. Thanks, mate. Appreciate it. And thank you for being here, Dr. Templer. So it gives me great pleasure to be here, but without my wife Lisa, Dr. Lisa Dyson, and the support of my children, Lily and Brennan, it would be much more difficult. So I am greatly honored to be here, and I appreciate the comments from Dr. Kulina. Thank you. I took the position from Cathy Innes at UNCG, but her boots are so hard to fill. As you all know, she passed away. God bless her. Cathy was a visionary in our area and has left an impressive legacy. And I was very fortunate to be part of the group that helped sort of change the name of this award to the Cathy Innes Scholar Award. So very exciting. So what you want to see is some work from me. Essentially, over the years, I've worked on experiential education since my dissertation. I've also used social constructivism a great deal. And this was strengthened by my work in New Zealand. In Aotearoa, New Zealand, the New Zealand curriculum is based on social constructivism. And also I've worked in the area of social ecological model. But before we move on, what I want to do is actually talk a wee bit about what I've seen over the last few days here that connects to this work. And I know many of you can make better connections than I can, but obviously the work of Michael Hempel and Paul Wright talking about transformative social emotional learning is important for us to listen to. The work with Carrie Schifrin, talking about social-emotional learning, and Cheryl and Christine talking about a whole school approach and a healthy school approach. And they had a principal there, Josh, which was wonderful to hear his voice. Kelly talking about resilience in Wyoming with teachers. This morning I was very excited and interested to see the work from Hire, Tori, Yanawa, Sinyan, Donal. They present some very interesting creative pedagogical work. But something that really sort of struck me yesterday was actually our paper award winners, two of them anyway, Corey and Corey. They taught us the word to be a co-conspirator. And so I'm going to try and throw this in a little bit, and I'm just going to ask you what you think it might look like as my friends and colleagues, to be a co-conspirator. So my hunch is that it would be something like thinking about our social understanding of Black, Hispanic, Asian, Pacifica people. It would be something like paying attention to the emotional price. Through our lack of self-awareness and social awareness, and the importance of reflexivity, and my graduate students have all taught me that recently. So we need to interrogate ourselves. Now, I know that's pretty heavy on a Saturday afternoon, but I hope you can bear with me, and I'll try to get a bit lighter now. So students have been at the center of my work. 1995, I published students' perspectives of an alternative physical education program where I studied two elementary schools in Columbus, Ohio. Both of those schools had Project Adventure for curriculum focus. I interviewed over 100 students over 2 years and worked with some great physical educators. So the work that I've done should have the student in the center. I hope it has, not always, but I would like to think it has. And sometimes my students challenge me, and he's smiling right now, yep. The pedagogical work that we've done, the curriculum that we've got, the research that we do, and the whole child, I think all of those need to be seen through the eyes of the student. So imagine if those folks in the Tennessee state capitol had put students up as the reason why they are there, instead of kicking out three of their folks for supporting students' views. There was about 10,000 students there, so it's not like the views of a couple of students. Just think how that we might be able to progress gun rights in the US. And I don't want to get political, so let's move on. All right, so students being at the center, and today I'm going to talk a little bit about school-based research, student perspectives, teachers' perspectives, a bit about cooperative learning as a pedagogical work, social emotional learning, and health education and physical education. Just remember that, I'm coming back to that. And then social emotional learning perspectives and the responses to our pedagogy from students. Thank you, Jenny, you're doing a great job. So my research has always been collaborative and with students and with teachers and principals and with graduate students in elementary schools or middle schools or high schools. So I can tell you the names of the teachers at the different places I've been. Michelle Harper, yep. Nods from Dominique. She even knows who she is. Where's she from?
Montreal.
Right. Alison Rubin, UNH. Diane Coleman, Memphis. And in New Zealand, a number of teachers. And then particularly in our part of the world, in Greensboro, we've got Moss Street Partnership School with, thank goodness, Dr. Bay working there with the teachers and the students and the physical educator. And the principal knows my name and replies to my email within a day. And then the middle college principal who we work with at the high school level, and several grad students have worked here in the room. Thank you for doing that. Pat yourselves on the back. Keisha Brown will have coffee with me. So I develop a relationship with those people wherever I've been. And what I've done is I've published papers with those teachers, professional papers, but also peer-reviewed papers. And in that list that Pam mentioned, they weren't professional papers, they were peer-reviewed papers. So I've got a bunch of others that I've published with teachers, and maybe that's more important for us, to make connections with teachers and principals, you know? And maybe our academia, our academy, Tom, doesn't give enough credence to publishing work in Joffrey or in publications that principals and teachers might read. Moving on, but it's very important to do the school-based research, folks. So much work has already been done with students and with teachers' perspectives. You know, there's some people in the room who have done some work recently. Dominique and Risto have already had a really nice paper recently. But, you know, work from former people like Anne McPhail, Mary O'Sullivan, Emma Enright, Peter Hasty. Maybe he's here. You here, Peter? Yeah, thank you. And Paul Wright, just to name a few. Certainly we have learned a lot from people in general education, and Cook Sather has a handbook on student perspectives, student voice, that's a very good read. Also Erickson and Schultz, 1992, an oldie good, but a goodie. And more recently, I have to give thanks and praise to Dr. Howley and Dr. Beck. They have an understanding of work with teachers, but also they have an understanding of work with students in schools. So congratulations to you for that work. But obviously there's a lot more to be done. A wee bit about cooperative learning. And so, you know, I've done a little bit of that, and Pam very kindly said some nice things about me. But, you know, cooperative learning is student-centered. That is a germane requirement for it. So perhaps my focus on student-centered is okay. I was very interested in this notion of reciprocal teaching and peer teaching when I did my dissertation. I defended my dissertation, and this unknown person by the name of Daryl Seedentop stood up. And Daryl said, "Ben, you're not doing cooperative learning. The teachers are doing cooperative activities." I went red in the face, sat down, and then I knew I had to change everything in my dissertation that said cooperative learning to cooperative activities. But very fortunately, my first job at Montreal, La Belle Province, McGill, I met Michelle Harper. Michelle Harper comes to me and says, "Ben, I do cooperative learning in my school." So I spend the next 3 years working with her and other teachers in Montreal, and they taught me what cooperative learning really was. So, you know, there's some structures there with Jigsaw, Think, Peer, Share, and some folks have talked about those during this week. Positive independence, individual accountability, social skills, group processing. And if you want to see a good review of that, my friends and colleagues, Vicky and Ash, look for that in Quest. Moving on, I want to just talk a little bit about group processing. So group processing is one of the elements of cooperative learning. Some of you know, anybody know about it a little bit? Yeah, probably know a wee bit. Group processing is where we have the student at the center, and it is student driven. So initially you might start off with some project adventure things like what happens, so what, know what, you know, the Kolb cycle that Kevin and colleagues presented the other day. But then in the end, we have the students running it. So in Montreal, I have Miss Pine coming in and talking to me, her ninth grade students going in, getting the stuff out of the equipment room, setting up their activities, and she didn't say a word to them. So, you know, very student driven. And that's where we want to get to. So when it's used for problem solving, I would suggest, or restorative practice, and Michael Heppel and I have talked about this, I think it's more of a restorative practice focus. And then where it's more about sharing learning and talking about the learning that occurs, the pedagogical learning, the content knowledge, then it's more about the group processing from cooperative learning. And recently, Dr. Howley and I have found it very interesting with our grade 9 work at middle college, and we hope to obviously work on a paper on that soon. Okay, moving on. So social emotional learning. So where do I jump from cooperative learning when I'm in New Zealand to social emotional learning? Well, you know, there had been very little research back in 2014. What happened in 2014 in New Zealand? ICEP, thank you, Pam. Some of you are there. So at ICEP in 2014, I had someone staying with me called Dr. Paul Wright. And so Paul was doing a session on social and emotional learning, and he was using TPSR as a pedagogical approach to talk about how that might be done in schools. And of course, Paul and I being friends and colleagues, we talked about that. And that's when I started designing stuff in New Zealand, and I wrote a grant that year to fund work in schools on social emotional learning. And since then, you would have read some of the papers that have come out of our work recently, where it took that long to get to those publications in, you know, 2019, 2020, 2021, because it's qualitative work, and we've got thousands of pages of transcript, and we have to get it organized and work through it. So the research obviously was leapfrogged with my CL learning team, and several of them are here, Donal, Eddie, Yanhua, Shinyun, and Yongjin's now arrived, and also a colleague, Judy Feller, who's not with us today. So social emotional learning can be defined this way. I prefer this definition. You can read it from Jones, and you would have seen that earlier today from Dr. Shen. And I prefer this definition from Stephanie Jones, who comes from the Harvard School. She does some very good work to something that many other folks are using, which is Castle, and we could have a debate about that some other time, but we'll move on now. So some of the findings that we've found across our studies from New Zealand and in Greensboro, North Carolina, is that social emotional learning can be an important part of the student's work. Listening to students is one way we can provide valuable perspective and insights into social emotional learning, which can help improve this quality of, and I would argue, health education and physical education programs. And I can send you some papers later if you're interested. But I think there is, and we've said this in some of our papers, that there's much more rhetoric surrounding social emotional learning than the work done in empirical school-based work with teachers and with students. And so some of our findings show that, you know, social emotional learning encourages kids to talk. That's what we want them to do, for them to socially interact. Circle time or restorative practice circles or group processing are really good strategies. Small group work, and being able to facilitate the learning with that. Sharing one resource. So in other words, if you're playing badminton, is a good example. You've got one net, you've got two or four kids playing, and it's useful to help them develop positive interdependence on each other, or whatever way you want to determine when students are contributing to each other's success or learning by working together. And modeling social emotional learning behaviors helps students learn through scaffolding. So, interesting. I don't know has anyone seen the YRBS data? It came out 2 weeks ago. Oh, come on, people. Have you not been watching the news? Seriously. Recent findings from CDC emphasize the importance of social emotional learning, folks. Guess what? And, of course, mental health. So, there were 17,000 students from 9 through 12 grade that filled out the survey. So it's not a few kids all across the country. And it highlights the mental health issues of our youth are deteriorating. Please go onto the CDC website and look for this and use it in your classes. Use it in your PET classes or your health education classes. So over 50% have sustained feelings of loneliness and depression. And it's worse with young women. More than 1 in 10 LGBTQ students don't go to school because they're afraid for their safety. And particularly with these crazy law changes. Folks, we've got to get out. We've got to change our state legislatures so they don't do that. And I won't drift into politics. Attempted suicide was very high among black students and was higher than white students, but it increased for both black and white students from 2011 to 2021. They didn't collect YRBS the last few years because of COVID. And also, you know, First Nations, you know, we're on the land of the First Nations. Their suicide rates have even gone up further. Thank you. So, for me last year, for those of you who know me, I was on my back for 5 months. So the connection here is this is my personal journey in terms of my physical health and well-being as a person. My Lisa had to put up with me, basically. I could not eat meals at the dinner table. I had to stand at the countertop. I had 4 epidurals. Normally they only give you 3. After the 4-1, the surgeon said, we better go in there. So we went in there and found, you know, a couple of herniated discs and some veins tethering the nerves. And so rehab and Risto, he's nodding because Risto had the same surgery last year. I empathize with you, mate. Yeah. So previously I'd been an athlete. I'd played rugby for 20 years. I downhill ski. I'd run a full marathon in 2:51. Yes, that's 6:30 pace, Pam. And about 30 half marathons and, you know, done triathlons. But, you know, it was the first time in my whole life for being out of shape. So, you know, depression, not being feeling well, being grumpy. Sorry, Lisa and Brennan and Lily. But I gained a personal awareness, a very personal awareness, that the physical was important, not just for my physical well-being, but for my mental well-being, folks. And you all know this. Now, Jonah Hill, documentary, Netflix, you got to have a look at it. Stats. So Jonah Hill points out the benefits of physical activity. So we've got a comedian telling the world we're not able to do it because no one wants to talk to us, but they want to listen to a comedian. He's telling us, he's talking to his counselor about, he used to be overweight at high school. And so then he'd be given all this physical activity to do and he couldn't do much of it. And he was depressed and upset about it. But he was never ever told that when he was a teen and overweight, that exercise was useful for him and for his mental well-being. What it was used as was a punishment. And we all know, we've all seen that, and we all know we're not going to do that, and we promote that in our programs, in our research, in our papers. So it wasn't until after his life, when he deconstructed it with his counselor, that he realized that exercise was a positive influence for his mental health. Isn't that wonderful? So have a look at that Netflix from Jonah. So if you were at my session this morning, you would have heard me say, you all got to go read Richard Tinning's book, 2010, about pedagogy. And someone came up after me, I think it was Carrie, and I'm not sure if she's here. She said she had to do something else, but she said that was great to see. And this was her words. She said, in our pedagogy, we have unintended consequences and we have intended consequences. And we have to own up to some of those unintended consequences. So, I have one last personal anecdote, and it's about Dyson's dance challenge. And it wasn't about me singing the other night. But what it was about was, and I don't want to waffle too much, so I want to just talk from my notes here. So I almost failed dance as an undergraduate. I was about to get a C-. The dean of our school at Otago University came to my final dance performance. After much debate with the dance teacher, they decided that I would get passed, and so that meant that I didn't have to do a whole more, an extra year of undergrad. And I'd already done 6 years, so, you know, double degree, yeah, okay. But there was a lot of fun in there too, folks, yeah. So Jan Bowell, the teacher, did not know the emotional impact that she was doing on me. Funnily, I remember her name 40 years ago. You know, even to this day, you can ask my wife, I'm embarrassed and don't want to dance. I don't dance at weddings. I sit down and my kids try to get me up. And you know why? It's because I almost failed dance at an undergraduate university that's supposed to be promoting physical activity and positive feelings for students. So just think about ourselves, that we have unintended consequences too, you know. So ironically now, I'm on a dissertation committee, and I know, I don't know if Joshua Jordan's here. He was thinking about coming, but I know I haven't seen him. I think he was tied up with his family. But he's doing pedagogical work. Dr. Hempel is his main advisor. He's working on the intersection of hip-hop, basketball, and spirituality. How cool is that? And guess what? He invited me on his committee. I'm so excited. The only problem is I won't be able to contribute to dancing at his dissertation defense, unfortunately. Moving on. So we have to create physical education with students together. So HPE, health and physical education, is purposeful and meaningful, and make sure that we avoid mindless physical activity or exercise as punishment or those unintended consequences of our teaching. So What might a student-centered curriculum look like, folks? And what I'm going to do is I'm going to propose something that hasn't happened in the US for a little while, and that is the integration of health education and physical education at the high school level. And I talked to someone about it the other day, and immediately they went to, you know, PETE, HETE. I've talked to a couple of folks about it, actually, and the struggles of that. And I said, well, let's try to get off it, over the minutiae of it, and think about, is there any example? And oh, Aotearoa New Zealand, they do HPE. They don't do health education and physical education separately. It's an integrated curriculum. So there's some folks we can look for and talk to. One of the rationales for this, anyone been to Shape America lately? Anyone heard of the crosswalk? So Shape America's come up with lately this notion of a crosswalk. And so what they're saying is there's a connection between social emotional learning and physical education. And they map the standards, at least three of the standards, to the to social emotional learning competencies. And guess how many of the there are eight health education standards. Guess how many of those map directly to social emotional learning? Anyone want to guess? That's a good guess. It's actually conservatively five, all right? So most of them map. So let's move on. So to sort of represent this from New Zealand and from a New Zealand perspective, and of course these slides will be available to you, I want to talk a little bit about and show you a little bit about a hauora and how, you know, where this notion came from for me to combine health and physical education. Obviously, it comes from my colleagues and friends in New Zealand, and seeing the teachers in New Zealand, they talk about hauora, and it influenced me. And this is not just the PE teachers; it's in the national curriculum for all teachers to be able to access and use as a framework for their teaching. And they talk about hauora in their classrooms, and they use it as a metaphor. And I think we could consider using it as a metaphor for our social emotional learning. So it would be holistic education for health education and physical education in the future. So the Māori philosophy has an interconnectedness of health education and physical education. And there's the four dimensions. So the house, the whare, each of the walls, one of the walls is the physical, one is the mental and emotional, one is the social, and one is the spiritual. And I've always avoided the spiritual, but recently a couple of my African-American friends have talked about it. And Josh Jordan is one of them. Did you hear what I said earlier? The intersection of hip-hop, basketball, and spirituality. Moving on. So, Dyson, put your money where your mouth is. In Greensboro, this fall, we are going to integrate social-emotional learning and health education and physical education together. So, usually health education's in the fall, so we're going to integrate physical education into health education with a social emotional learning focus in 2013 in a high school in Greensboro. And then in the spring, we're going to integrate health education into the physical education in a high school in Greensboro. And we'll let you know how it goes. If anyone's interested in it, send me an email. It's very exciting, I think. I'm excited to work there. So, build on, what the heck is that? So, you know, looking across the world at student-centered pedagogy. Who's been doing it for hundreds of years? Klaus? Gooden Doug? The Germans have. But we don't know about it because it's written in German. Recently, Klaus and his colleagues wrote a paper, I think it's in EPER, is that right, Klaus? On Bildung and its contribution to physical education. So I really encourage you to read it. And obviously Klaus and his colleagues know much more about it than I do. But My understanding, it is, puts the student at the center way more than we do, way more than we consider doing. It's very student driven. They're wanting the student to drive the curriculum, to drive the uncertainty, right? And I thought I knew a lot about student-centered until I met my German friends and they've taught me a lot. Okay, so I was going to be playing police right now, message in a bottle, so you can all just think about it. I know Dominique knows all the words, so she can hum it. But this is the last slide. This is it, folks, the roundup. So I hope that my message might get opened up. But it's kind of like a message in a bottle. It's not like the YRBS data. I don't know where you've all been, and if you haven't heard of it, but I've been seeing it on PBS and BBC TV, and you know, because of the mental health aspect, it's really getting out there, folks. So I encourage you to look for that. And so, unlike YBS, which has a lot of media coverage, I think we in PE, let's be honest, we live in a bit of a bubble. You know, we think that other people understand what we do, and we think that other people care about what we do. I'm flying down here the other day, and a person's beside me, and I tell them that I'm in physical education, and you know what's the first question they ask me? What sport do you coach? So they really don't know what we do, folks. So my suggestion, I think we need to do a better job of connecting with schools and with the community. And I'm very excited because those presentations I mentioned earlier, there's a lot of good work that was presented this morning that is school-based and community-based. So, you know, keep doing it, please. You know, and a lot of them I haven't mentioned, with Dr. Chen and his work and his group. You know, excellent work in schools. And thank you, Risto, for the shout-out. We have got miles of data from schools with kids at the elementary level, at the high school level, at the community level. And it's just wonderful. But, you know, I've learned a lot from from Dr. Beck, Dr. Howley, and Dr. Shen. And they're at the cutting edge, because I know that best, of embedding this creative pedagogy into the schools and into the communities. I think we need to go out there and be allies. And so I learned yesterday that it's not just being an ally, is it, Corey and Corey? What we need to do is actually be a co-conspirator, right? So the notion of co-conspirator is that we've got a message, we've got a value, we think it's important, we want to share it, we want to do it in an equitable and inclusive manner. And I really like that concept, and I hope I can do it justice when we're working out in the schools. Finally, I gotta say, I believe that, thank you, students at the center of the work that we do, the work I do, I think is very important. I don't think we can think we know what students think. I'll be honest, I used to get so disappointed. Peter Hastie mentioned it earlier, that some of our friends and colleagues do not go into the schools and do not work with kids and students and don't think they need to. And I disagree with that philosophy. And that's typically a philosophical bent that exists in Australia and New Zealand, unfortunately. I don't think we can assume that we know what students think or what they feel or what they value about social-emotional learning, about pedagogical work, about their mental health and well-being, and I think we need to get out there and ask them. So I just encourage you all and anyone who's listening to this to do the same. And so I'll end with the Maori greeting. Kia ora, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou, tēnā koutou katoa. Questions.
Thank you, everybody. You said 30 minutes. You stayed at 30 minutes. I'm going to give you another round of applause. So, Ben, if you can stay here. we'll open up for some questions.
Yeah, hit me with you, Bishop.
So, anybody have any questions you want to bring up for discussion with Dr. Dyson?
I'll ask one. When you talk about integrating physical education into health education, that's exciting, but can you give us a good example of what that might look like?
That was my question.
That is a very, very good question. So, when we're doing the physical education, what we do is we start off with team building, right? And so we'll do, you know, the games that I learned in my dissertation. We will do group juggle, and we will pass a ball around, and we'll stop and ask the students there, how do they think about this? What do they feel? What's important to them? And so, to me, when we're doing that, we aren't just doing physical education. We are sort of extending the curriculum to getting them to think about how they think about it. And so, in the end, wouldn't it be wonderful if you create an environment where you come into the gymnasium, the students are sitting in their groups, and they are discussing how they feel today. So, Dr. Howley, starting the lesson with a meditation and breathing, and then checking in with them, like we do with really good TPSR curriculum or very good anything curriculum, right? So, what we're trying to do, what good teachers do is they find out how to connect with the students. So what that would be is supporting the mental health and well-being of the students. And if we're supporting the mental health and well-being of the students, we're not only doing good physical education, but we're doing good health education. I think we are learning about that. I don't have any answers to it. If anyone does have any good ideas about how we should do it, please, please send them to me. I bet you all have some thoughts about it. I know there's going to be some barriers, particularly if we are, think about it at the university level. But you know, in Greensboro, our students end up with a physical education certification and a health education. And so they can teach health education and physical education in the school level. So if they can do that, I don't know why we aren't connecting some of this content. So imagine a social emotional learning class that focuses on different competencies. That whether I'll even go to the dark side, I'll use Castle's stuff, right? Social awareness, self-awareness, relationships, decision-making, and so in the decision-making part, why don't we use some TGFU or Sport Ed, you know, to talk about that in a physical way, and then try to break it down into the kids thinking about it. So I think too long in physical education, we haven't ask the students enough, so we haven't put them at the center. We haven't believed that the elementary kids could talk. So, Sunya, could your grade 3 and 5 students do photo voice and talk about pictures they took in their school? Right, big nod. And I know you can talk about it. So, they can do this stuff. And I think we do a disservice to our students when we don't engage them cognitively, whether we're doing health education or whether we're doing physical education or whether we're doing social emotional learning. Is that okay?
That's okay. Thanks.
Okay for now. Cheers.
Can't wait to see that. See you all.
Dr. Templin, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Congratulations.
Thank you, buddy.
We live in very difficult times.
Yes.
And I wonder about how the politics of our time, particularly related to social justice, integrate into this message of being student-centered, and how we prepare teachers, how we work with students in schools when some of the politics are suggesting just the opposite of what we're trying to promote. Any thoughts on that?
Well, number one, everyone in this room needs to vote. Number two, go and campaign. Number three, where we get an opportunity, you know, we have to be, I asked Corey, should we be an ally to you all so that you are supported. And no, they said you've got to be a co-conspirator. So where we can, let's think about how could we be a co-conspirator in the school or other community places where we work, but also in our universities, you know. I had a graduate student who, she's a high school teacher, she's in West Virginia, she's doing a study on social-emotional learning with her high, she's interviewing her high school kids about her students, she's acting up the way, she's getting another teacher to interview the students she's teaching about social-emotional learning in her high school. So she had to change the name of her study to character education. Because if she had on the consent letter for parents, the 20 kids that she interviewed, will you be involved in social emotional learning study? Most of those parents would have said, no, that's connected to, you know, critical race theory. Can't do it. So we're gonna have to be creative. And I talked to someone from Florida, maybe it was Sarah Flory.
Sarah Flory.
Yeah, and we're talking about, well, what are we gonna do, you know, with what the crazy stuff going on there? So that they, we just have to be a little more creative. I think we have to stay true to ourselves that we want it to be student-centered, and we want to be doing social and emotional learning, or whatever we want to call it. Maybe social-emotional learning is too much of a cliche term. Maybe it's just too easy for us. And that's why I balk at Castle and all the work they do, you know, because I think, you know, it's all, that their work is generated from a big quantitative paradigm, meta-analysis. They haven't gone out and asked students or teachers about social-emotional learning. They've studied, they've put their work onto the schools and onto the teachers. So I think, teachers will find creative ways of doing this. The good teachers will. We know there's good teachers here everywhere. We have to help and support the good teachers. That's what I think. Is that fair?
Yes.
Well, Vera Bell. That's a tough one.
Tough time.
Hey, but it's an opportunity too, you know?
Yes.
To be a co-conspirator, right, guys? At least we know what that is kind of now. Yes, hi.
Dr. Dustin, thank you for your lecture. I really appreciate that. I always have this question. I do want your thinking or opinions about these two questions. And the first is, what is the ultimate goal? What do you think is the ultimate goal of physical education? And the second is, what makes
my slides go up again?
As a school subject matter, what is the unique role that physical education is playing as a school subject matter?
So, the answer to the first question, I think physical education should be much more holistic. So I think...
Wise, what do you think?
Why? Because I think it should include not only physical activity and skill development, it should also include cognitive understanding. We don't bring the students, I know Dr. Chen has worked on assessing students' cognitive ability, so that's great. But also I think for years and years we've done, and many people at the conference have presented on notions of social-emotional learning, whether it's resilience or other work. And I think that we can't just assume that kids know how to be to develop social skills or to develop their emotional well-being. I think we have to help them, and I think we have to help teachers to develop that. So to answer your first question, I would put up Ha'ora if you can, because Ha'ora represents the physical, the social, the emotional, and this thing that, you know, is in the too hard basket, just like emotional is in the too hard basket, which is the spiritual bit, right? But maybe our African-American black friends can actually teach us about that, right?
Absolutely.
Right, thank you, Corey. And maybe if we represent this to teachers and ask them what they think about it.
Yeah, I totally agree.
So the first, so that's what I think the goal and the representation of physical education should be. And I'm arguing now that we should get broader and get involved with health education. And the reason why we should do that is because of the mental health and well-being component or aspect of that they do a better job of probably than we do, or a more important focus. So the other, what was the second question, sorry?
What makes physical education as a separate school subject matter, what is the unique role that physical education plays as a school subject matter?
It helps improve and develop the students' physical activity, and helps improve and develop the students' physical skills. And I'm going to argue that we could be the leaders in the field on developing the student's social-emotional learning ability. And I would argue that we shouldn't just use the CASEL framework, we should develop our own framework for social-emotional learning. Dr. Barcelona, could you just mention whether you think that's a useful idea or not?
I do.
And why is that, Dr. Barcelona?
Well, like you said earlier today, I think it's important because it gives it, it aligns more and can be further embedded into physical education curriculums instead of being more broadly conceptualized, not specific to certain contexts and certain concepts. So.
Okay, and we have to learn from this, so we have to learn from our work. So I'll mention a lot of the work that Donald did in teaching high school was focused on social emotional learning with a big focus at the when we got out of COVID, right? Some of the kids had never been to school before. And then as he shifted into his second year, he's working more on the physical because that's what we do in physical education. We do physical activity, we do physical skill development. So I think it's okay that we have different units of work that have different focus. I don't think enough students know how to stretch in this country, and if they did, they wouldn't have so many lower back problems. And I think PE teachers need to teach kids how to stretch properly. And I think we could do that, and then include the social emotional feeling of how it feels to stretch and stretch in public. And so I stretch on planes, and sometimes my kids look at me, my Lily says, "What the hell are you doing there?" And I said, "I'm stretching." She says, "What are you doing that for? I'm embarrassed. Don't do that." You know? But, you know, I can do it. She's not going to do it. Do you see what I mean? So let's talk about it further. I think that's a very complicated question, but a very important question. I think that physical is our home ground, but I think there's an opportunity to do more than that, and particularly with all this work that needs to be done for the mental health and well-being of students. So if boys are doing, girls are doing dance and they're not enjoying it, we've got to sit down and talk to them about it in a circle or a group processing session. We're not just going to drive on and teach them the line dance because we think it's good pedagogy, right? And that sitting down and talking to them in a restorative circle or a group processing circle is definitely more on the social emotional end. There's one question down there, and then we finish.
I think we'll just do one more question.
Are you starting with high school? I'm in elementary, and I also teach in North Carolina. So
excellent. Well, yeah, get us your information.
Are you starting in high school? Or are you eventually going to be working your way? Because I know in elementary they don't have health. At least in North Carolina, we didn't teach separate health. We did have to integrate it in 20 minutes. I think it's great that you are doing this in high school because I feel like you could give elementary teachers in particular a way to get started in this conversation.
Sure.
So how are you going to be?
Well, I'm going to get an expert here, Dr. Beck, to talk about elementary school and what they do out at a school in North Carolina, Moss Street Partnership School in Reedsville.
At Moss Street Partnership School, PE teachers do teach health education, especially intensively during health education summer learning program. So if during regular semester, I would say most of his lessons are focused on physical education, but he will definitely incorporate during warm-up or during wrap-up, he incorporates some pieces of health education. But at Moss Street, we do have summer learning program, and we do have a separate session for health education, more focused on health education.
and that's where students learn about different information about safety, how to maintain their physical safety when riding bicycle or something. So I saw PE teacher got prepared like different bicycles and different equipment to demonstrate about that, and kids learning about it. Yeah.
Right. And so let's chat later, but yes, it should be. Do you agree that it should be in the elementary school? More than 20 minutes.
That's where you're getting started. You're building that foundation.
Let's chat later.